Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Androscoggin. This is a bi-monthly podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Androscoggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind our region's economic and community vitality. I'm your host, Jana Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber. I am joined by local talent, longtime friend, and our producer, Mr. Mark Turcotte. Say hello.
Talent is a stretch. I'll go with producer, but talent is a stretch.
You have a whole skill set and talent outside of that, which we get to enjoy in this space.
Okay.
Right?
I'll go along with
your
that.
Your talent. I'm sure you go to some places and they're like, oh, here's the talent again, and yeah, they roll their eyes.
So that's right.
That's
oh,
what I
don't
mean.
They roll their eyes.
See your talent. Together, we explore how incredible people, the voices of Androscoggin, build, lead, and thrive while contributing to a better quality of life for all. So super excited for today's episode. We're joined by Brian Dubois. He was born and raised in Auburn, and he combines a deep-rooted knowledge of the Lewiston-Auburn area with a professional background that speaks volumes about his leadership and dedication to the community. He is a Bentley University graduate. Do they give you a Bentley at graduation? We'll come back to that.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I didn't get to see what you drove up in today, so I was curious. He's a Bentley University graduate and former executive director of the Auburn-Lewiston YMCA, and his journey has been marked by service and connection. He has over a decade of experience in real estate. Is that accurate? Does that even give
it
enough credit?
12 years, yes.
Yeah, that's more than a decade.
That's right.
And we are great with math here on Build, Lead, Thrive.
So good.
Brian specializes in helping families find their dream homes, guiding sellers through seamless transactions, and providing investors with strategic opportunities. Passionate about delivering exceptional service, integrity, and clear communication, Brian is not only a trusted real estate expert, but also a team leader, actively empowering others to succeed in this field. I love development. I just love when we develop people. He's currently making waves in Androscoggin County, building connections and fostering opportunities for career growth in real estate. We're excited to dive into Brian's insights and stories today. So welcome, Brian.
Well, that was quite a write-up. I hope I live up to the billing.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt. I've known you for quite some time, and I've known you in a couple of these different ways. Did not know about YMCA. What was the time frame that you were in that role?
Well, I was in the YMCA organization for 17 years, but here in Auburn, it was 2009 to 2013.
Wow. And yeah. So prior to 2009, you were somewhere else but in the YMCA?
Yes. YMCA in Massachusetts, Bangor, actually started my Y career in the same hometown Y.
All right. Well, before we dive in, let's have our first segment. Tell us more, Mark.
We've been getting complaints about our singing, so...
So are we not doing it this time?
I'll leave it up to you.
What would they like to hear better? Are you going to get this in the edit?
How about a good hum?
I don't know that I can do that any better than I can sing.
Apparently Brian's heard our singing as well.
He probably went and checked this out and was like, oh, I hope they don't make me do that part. Yeah, just go ahead and read it then. We'll put some music behind it later.
All right. We'll work on it.
Was feedback?
We'll work
was that,
on
that's
singing.
A nice word to say
that's
what
right.
we got.
We'll come back for next episode.
Okay, great.
Our first segment is called Getting to Know You, where we ask guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help listeners learn and connect with our guests on a personal level. Before we get into the deeper questions, this is like the appetizer before the main course.
You ready for a little appetizer?
Of course, you bet.
All right. What is one local business or community initiative that gets you excited right now?
Yes, I love the Trinity Jubilees groundbreaking for a new facility. That gets me excited. The services they provide, your audience probably familiar that there's a soup kitchen element. I don't know if everyone's aware enough to know about the job application training support. But
I think that's one of the things that gets overlooked a lot.
Yeah.
They do a good job talking about it, but if people aren't following Trinity's Facebook or kind of knows that whole piece, I think that's one of the most impactful things that they do and one of the least known and the least aligned with assumptions people make when they don't know. If that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, having been in the nonprofit world, there's some mixed feelings about handouts versus hand up, you know, and I think this has both for people who need it at some things in certain parts of their life, and then there's another step of getting people back into the workforce, introducing them to resources they wouldn't have on their own, mm-hmm. and being productive and self-confident and good examples for their own children, and mm-hmm. It's really a remarkable program.
Yeah, I'd be curious how it actually plays out on site, but I think oftentimes a lot of people wouldn't realize that when they're going for one of their programs or somebody's serving them at their daily meal or helping them on their food pantry the one day a week that they do that, that the person helping you in that moment, giving you your food, serving the thing, is probably a return volunteer who got a job and is back to pay it forward. And that happens mm-hmm. way more than people know. And mm-hmm. one of my favorite stories, when they're able to lift up those personal stories, which are some of my favorite moments. Because I think it's a little bit of a myth buster, mm-hmm. right? In terms of like what assumptions we make about who needs those services, why they need those services, mm. what giving them, giving things away, that's the narrative that we mm. sometimes hear, what that means. And the reality is a lot of people use that opportunity when they're in their worst spot and they don't forget it and they pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, specifically at Trinity, they come back to Trinity to pay it forward.
That's right. And the stories of gratitude are amazing. Mm-hmm. Until you've walked a mile in their shoes, you know, no one would ever hope to experience some of the things that have been experienced, yeah. but to be able to have that support to dig their way out, mm-hmm. I think it's truly remarkable that program, and now, you know, a new facility is on its way to serve more and to make more of an impact. I think that's just amazing.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've gotten to see the architectural drawings, if they had them there the day mm-hmm. of, it's beautiful mm-hmm. too. Yeah, I think yeah. it's going to aesthetically add to that section of Bates Street in a really nice
well,
way.
They've done such a great job in utilizing what they have, but yeah. it just...
what they can get done in the space they're in.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I mean, it's kind of miraculous, right? Like, it's yeah. almost... It's like, how do you manage that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Shout out to Erin Reed, because she's just a badass nonprofit leader. She's doing really amazing work. And the thing that I love and hate most about her, and I have said this to her face, I will send her this episode, is that she's so busy doing... that she doesn't get a chance to get out and tell people what she's doing. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot, like she's not going to networking events, which would be great because I think there's great people out there to support her. Mm-hmm. But she is so authentically mission focused and mm-hmm. driven that she like, she's doing the doing and she doesn't have time for BS. And I wicked respect that. And also sometimes I would love to just pull her out because she's just so incredible.
Well, the stories that she can tell firsthand to build awareness around that. But you're right, her focus...
You got to go there to hear those stories.
Right. Her focus is on delivering the service.
Yeah.
And that's where she needs to be right now.
Yeah. yeah. We should all be more like that, right? Mm. Like it's an incredible quality.
Mm.
What's the best part of working in Androscoggin County?
I don't know if I can give you the best part off the top of my head, but I love the accessibility. You know, I've got a daughter that goes to school in Boston. So the turnpike accessibility,
yeah.
but, you know, we love to camp. We, the kids are younger. We hit ski destinations and the ocean and, you know, everything's within 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing as a place to live, work, and play. We've
yeah.
got it all at our fingertips.
Yeah. How do you unwind after a busy day now? I heard camping and skiing in there, but your busy day in 2025.
Oh, after a busy day. That's interesting. I'd like to maybe shift it and say after a busy week.
Mm.
We purchased a camp up in Dover Foxcroft on Sebeck Lake.
Nice.
4 years during COVID. Our plan was to grab a camper van or a RV and head across country with our kids while they were all still under one roof. And then COVID hit and shut everything down.
Yeah.
So we went up there. It was after the state parks opened up. We were still socially distanced, but we went out camping with a bunch of friends, and we just fell in love with the place. And not to bore you with the story, but we found a camp that both the seller and the broker didn't realize that what the real estate market was doing is that it was just, you know, everyone told us to buckle up.
You bought the camp before that?
Well, they told us to buckle up, cut your expenses by 30%, and then it just took off.
Yeah.
And the market had already taken off, but they didn't get the memo in Dover Foxtrot.
That's great news for you.
And so they had tried to sell that camp for the previous five seasons and were unsuccessful. So we looked at what it was priced at the previous summer, and we said, well, geez, we would,
would pay that.
I think we missed the boat. We would have definitely paid that.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not going to come back with a figure like that this summer. We called a broker and we said, hey, we saw that this was on the market last year, but it's not on the market yet this year. Is it coming back up? And she said, well, let me call the seller. And she called us back and they said, yes, it plans on coming back and we'd like to make you an offer. And we're kind of bracing ourselves. And they offered a price that was less.
They discounted it because it hadn't moved in 5 years.
Right. And we thought, yes, we'll take it.
Absolutely. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, right. So we kind of fell into a camp, and it's been just a great getaway for us, particularly during the summer months.
Yeah.
So
that's my dream. And I say this knowing you're a real estate agent, so keep your eyes open for me. But actively looking for a place, because I miss the boat on them all being under the same roof and being smaller. But just want a place that, like, a place and not a series of places with a series of memories, which I also love. We've been doing that. But a place that where is our family home base, for those summer vacations or I don't know if it's a four season or it's got a really good fire stove, like, great, let's do Christmas there. But something that someday my grandkids are wading into the water in.
Right.
Like, I'd like to establish that now. And I did not intervene in the market at the right point. And it's anyway, it's a challenge.
Never thought we would be in a position to own a camp like that. It's just coming from the nonprofit world.
You had not amassed a lifetime of wealth on the nonprofit world?
Correct. Right. So
strange, Ryan.
So things have changed dramatically for us. We feel so fortunate, but to have that camp has really been a blessing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Good for you. We're going to move into our meat and potatoes, main course. That's just scratching the surface. Let's go a little bit deeper.
All right, let's do it.
Let's talk about community roots and impact. So growing up in Auburn and then later serving as the executive director of the Auburn Lewiston YMCA, you've built strong ties to this community. How have those experiences shaped your perspective on leadership and community building in Androscoggin County?
So I'm the youngest of six kids.
Oh.
So part of my community roots is, being someone's brother. Little brother.
Yeah.
But it affords us the opportunity to know a lot of people. You couple that with being the director of the Y and, the amount of people that come through the doors of the Y, you get the fortunate experience of meeting so many more people.
Yeah.
So my wife, who was in real estate already, suggested that, with your community contacts and my experience, we would make a great team. And lo and behold, in 2013, some things changed in my world, and we decided to team up. But having those community contacts is really benefited our business.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah. I mean, how has it made you think about leadership?
So my experiences with the Y, having traveled a bit through New England, you get the chance to see some really admirable community stakeholders. Some people have made a huge impact on me. What they've done to go out of their way to support a cause or an institution, give so selflessly, but not just in money. They talk about time, talent, and treasure. What these people offered intellectually, blood, sweat, and tears, and I'm going to put my money where their mouth is, truly inspiring. In fact, that is carried over to our business model today, where we have what we call our Give Where You Live program, where we give $100 with every closing to one of five local charities. The leadership through those different communities really made an imprint on us, seeing them lead. In fact, in Bangor in particular, since we're talking about Bangor, we had a number of board leaders, community stakeholders, that would challenge each other.
I love a good competition.
Right. And I just thought that was healthy banter, all for a good cause. So our hope was, when we started our Give Where You Live program, that you know, maybe other realtors or maybe other small business owners might be compelled to do that as well.
To feel challenged to do that,
right,
as well?
We haven't felt comfortable to come out and challenge them ourselves. Maybe we should.
Maybe today's the day,
but
Brian.
But we thought that, you know, lead by example, that others might follow suit. So maybe there'll be a day for that.
Maybe you just need to be splashier about doing it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Remember the ALS challenge? Was it the ice bucket challenge?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That worked. Mm-hmm. Like, actually moved the needle on ALS treatments and cures. Like, actually worked. And so get yourself a bucket of icy water and tell people about your give where you live, right?
Well, so here we are, a small group within Keller Williams Realty. And we're about to pass the $180,000 mark in 9 years.
Just in the give?
Just in the give. I never thought that we would be here with that.
That's impact.
So our vision was probably half of that. So to double it.
Oh, you need to dream bigger.
I guess so. Yeah.
Good. Start that today.
Right.
I think that we're talking about this anyway, but your work in real estate goes beyond transactions, not just for Give Where You Live, but you're actively empowering others in your field.
Mm-hmm.
So what inspired you to take on a leadership role in the real estate space, other than your wife, or maybe, maybe you can expand on that.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you see real estate contributing to the vitality of our region? And we can parse that out, because I'd like to talk a little bit deeper about some of the real estate trends that you're seeing. I just had a recent interview that was somewhat contested in some spaces. We'll come back to that. But I think there's some optimism in the real estate space and what it means towards our community. So tell me first about empowering others in your field, and then we'll go a little deeper.
So this unexpectedly has been a real motivator for me. We were at a point in our business model where we had to decide whether we were going to expand, recruit more people to our team, or kind of retreat and have it just be my wife and I. And we decided that we were going to be all in. And about the same time, we partnered with this this company called Place. Place's model is really, to oversimplify it, is one of support. For small businesses, particularly real estate, you know, we have our growing pains.
Yeah.
And this Place partner has been through all the real estate growing pains, and they could get us through some of these challenges a lot quicker because of, A, their experience, their resources and things. So we decided to connect with Place, and at the time that we decided that we were going to be all in. And with those resources with Place, we've expanded our team. We've cultivated brokers who weren't sure that this was the right field for them.
Yeah.
Weren't sure of a lot of things in their life.
I'm sure that's just singular to the real estate profession.
right. But, you know, coming from places where they weren't healthy, they were losing sleep over their, you know, what they were doing currently at the time. They come and they took the leap of faith to partner with us to get training. And now health has improved and sleeping patterns have improved. And, oh, by the way, they're crushing it.
Their
productivity is just amazing. They're flourishing. They feel like they've found their niche. And I guess I didn't expect this when we kind of went down this road, but it's been so rewarding to see them flourish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's become a very important part of what we're doing now.
So at what point from the time you started real estate did you kind of get to that point where you're like, all in, leap, going to go for it? How long was that?
Yeah, this was, it was only this May. I think it will be the third year. You know, people have, as I mentioned, a lot of small business. You know, you ramp up and then you kind of hit a ceiling. And then, you know, if you're fortunate enough, you break through that ceiling. But then, you ramp up again through growth and you hit another ceiling. And, okay, how am I going to get through this? You hit a few of those and you think, okay, do I persevere through this, or is this am I comfortable, mm-hmm. maybe complacent, mm-hmm. or do we need to keep going? But we had a real, my wife and I had a real sit down heart to heart, like yeah. this is one of those moments that will define what it is we want, and we decided to go for it, and you know, we've done pretty well.
I love that. First, mm-hmm. congratulations on your doing well part. But yeah. That's so transferable to mm-hmm. so many business owners. I would say even to nonprofit, the leapfrog of I've grown to the maximum capacity that me and my team can currently handle. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a decision point. And I would say in my own painful experience, it is almost like you only know you're at that point because you're looking in the rear view. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that point was actually a little while ago, and now right. I'm stretched beyond my capacity. Mm-hmm. And I think you said it earlier, do I retreat to stay within the capacity, which it turns out I've already surpassed, and I need mm-hmm. to right size mm-hmm. either my capacity to the goals or my work to the capacity that I have. And that's a really challenging decision. Mm-hmm. It's not one you can kind of just jump into, and particularly when other people are impacted, when you're putting the dinner on the table for a couple of folks and it's not just a personal decision you get to make. And so I think you described that really well, because I talk to a lot of small businesses, startups, folks who have started a business within the last couple of years. And at this point, the last couple of years means they started, you know, in or just after the pandemic. So there's a whole nother nuanced layer onto it. I think they think that it's something they're doing wrong. And I don't think folks realize how universal that experience is of growth, and then your growth being restricted because you literally just can't do more. Mm. Maybe you're doing it at 70 hours a week and you've given up a couple dinners with the kids weekly just to like get to that point. It's so universal. It's a pattern that happens in kind of the life cycle stage of growing a company, growing a team, growing a nonprofit. Every time I talk to somebody, they feel like they're doing something wrong, and it's something that's unique to them and that no one else knows it or experiences it. And for folks listening, like, no, that's pretty, that is really universal. And you just described it really clearly. I don't know if others, it's a helpful way to think about helping others see that they're not alone.
And there's a difference between being all in with your model and being all in with your time. So
tell me more.
Right. So for us, we said, well, geez, if we are all in, what does that mean for our work-life balance? Mm. You know, part of being in this industry, people look at it as, oh, you've got all the time in the world. You get to, you know, make your own schedule and be at your kids' games.
Monday through Tuesday, but you're working 14-hour days on the weekend.
which is true. You know, we have that flexibility. If we manage our time correctly, we can do that. But like a lot of small businesses, you know, we're burning the midnight oil. We're up early. We stay up late. Mm-hmm.
I think my real estate agent closed on their vacation because that's the timing of the contract for that's what happens,
sure.
right?
And some people, I mean, one broker that I know of was so proud that she put a house under contract on Easter Sunday. And I thought, that doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
You know, that's not all in my definition. Mm-hmm. All in is really being all in with our model and not all in because I'm sacrificing my family. That's a non-negotiable.
Always available. It doesn't equal all in.
Yeah. Mm. So with this model, what we do is we work with agents so that they can do what they're really good at. And most people are in this business because they're great interacting with people. They want to be people pleasers. They're service oriented. And they may or may not be great with the paperwork that goes with that. So how can we support them?
Yeah.
That? We have leverage. So now they're not staying up late doing their paperwork after an exhausting day of working with clients.
They peopling. We call that peopling.
Peopling. But they can stay in their lane and do what they're really good at and have help with things that they're not. And their success level just goes through the roof. So you're not working on Easter Sunday. I'm not working on Easter mm-hmm. Sunday. But together we are building productive lives that are meaningful, and we're there for our families, and by the way, our income looks pretty good too.
Yeah.
So
that does sound lovely.
You're welcome anytime. You would be fantastic.
Some point I'll have to figure out what's next for me. I won't hesitate to give you a call. I've thought about real estate before for all of those reasons, and I don't mind.
Everybody loves real estate.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. It's yeah, that's right. I love the way that you think about it, because it took me a long time. I think All In has meant to me at so many stages in my life. Mm-hmm. Always in and not just all in. Mm-hmm. And it's something to be really mindful of. And particularly in this role and even previous roles, I love what I do. Mm-hmm. So there is no distinction when you love what you, like when I go to a show at the theater, and yes, they're members, and yes, I told them I'd go to the show, and then I go to the show that I love, and I love mm-hmm. live theater anyway.
Sure.
I don't know, was I working? Like, no. No, you know what I mean? And so the lines can get really blurry depending on what your career is. And mm-hmm. I love the way you're articulating the model piece of it, because so many, and I think there's just a lesson that I want to help lift up out of what you just said. So many small business owners get into their business because they love the thing, whether it's designing t-shirts or being a trainer or whatever.
Sure.
And almost no one gets into it and says, oh, and I also love bookkeeping and marketing my business and right. client records and compliance and regulations. Like, nobody does that.
Right.
But for most businesses, 66% of the members of the chamber and 69% of businesses in our county are 10 employees or less.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have an HR department. Like, that's you, buddy.
Right.
And so I think it's just, it's funny because that's something that we at the chamber are doing, is actually creating back office services and supports for mm-hmm. some initiatives and nonprofits so that people can be good mm-hmm. at the things they're good at and use their resources targeted in the places that they're going to do the most good with it
mm-hmm.
And find ways to kind of find some savings and partner outside of that, because doing all the things isn't fun, and very few of us, if anyone, is actually good at doing all the things, right? It's just a necessary evil.
That's right.
Of doing the work.
And you know, if you're saying, and I don't want to get too philosophical, this is about as deep as I get as a human being, but if you are saying yes to something, by default you're saying no to something else. So the more I work, the less I see my family, or the more I work, the less I invest in my own health, the more I work, I'm sacrificing something else. So somewhere in there is a good balance where I'm putting in an honest day's work and I'm not sacrificing everything else in my life in order to make this work, to find leverage, to find support. That's what we try to offer.
Even really brilliant, top-performing business folks, many, who can think about their work time. They're able to apply that philosophy to work hours, mm-hmm. but they can't, like if all of a sudden it's the night or the weekend, they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a disconnect around knowing what I'm worth, like Shanna, my time, what mm-hmm. my time is worth,
right.
versus the president and CEO of the chamber's time. I can, like, I do the math, I run the spreadsheets, I can tell you exactly how much an hour of that time is.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to relate, like, it's almost like I can tell you that hourly wage, Shanna's Saturday 3 p.m. hour is double that wage.
Sure.
I know what that time is valued. And I can tell you the poor girl from rural Maine couldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the young single mom couldn't have done that. Like, it's mm-hmm. part confidence, it's part life experience. It's part having given up that time to learn the value of it, I think, that mm-hmm. is really truly deep. How do you value your time, Mark? You've got your day job. You've got these lovely times that you spend with me. Then you're off being talent
yeah.
in these other times. And they run the 24-hour clock almost, because you're a young man. Both of you are very young men.
Oh, stop. Stop.
Like, how long did it take you to learn to value your time like that?
A long time. Until COVID.
Mm-hmm.
COVID taught me to value my time.
I honestly think, I think there's something about like age and did you parent and like mm-hmm. at what age did you parent? How did that inform it? But man, COVID made all of us value our time
yep.
very different. Like, societally changed behaviors and very concretely is not only changing like workforce and labor, it is 100% changing segments of our community's communities everywhere, but our community's economy because people value their time differently. Mm-hmm. I think that's all wrapped up in that. And yeah, COVID really did. Thanks for saying that, because that's right.
It was a 180 for me.
Yeah.
For COVID, because up until then, for the past 10 years, I'd been working every weekend. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit, and I had a couple of weekends off. And I'm like,
this is cool.
This feels pretty good. I could get used to this.
Yeah.
So I cut back drastically, and I stopped producing.
Yeah.
It's the best decision I ever made.
I love that for you.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Change for me after leaving the nonprofit sector. Because the nonprofit sector is the nonprofit sector. You know, typically you are charged with carrying out a mission with limited resources, mm-hmm. limited staff, mm-hmm. and if something's going to get done, you're going to be part of the solution, and it doesn't matter when that happens. So you've got to be available and ready. And if you don't, who loses? You know, it's typically kids, families, mm-hmm. depending what
services you run or what your mission is, yeah.
Right, and you can't, I mean, you've got such responsibility to the people you serve, you can't just not do it.
I chuckle because I think not everybody realizes, like, the Chamber is a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. I'm a nonprofit leader. Mm-hmm. We work in business. I like to think we run our nonprofit like a business, and, you know, mm-hmm. but yeah, everything you just described sounds very familiar. I didn't mean to chuckle, but like, yep, that. Take those off. Yeah.
And the fortunate thing is you're usually surrounded by staff who are also committed. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean you.
No, but I am.
But it does apply to you. You know, they're equally moved by the mission. They're committed mm-hmm. to the cause. So it's you're all in it together type mm-hmm. of mentality, which kind of eases the pain.
Yeah.
But that does, you know, when you step out of that world and realize, like, you're a weekend without a show, like, oh, This is good. I can spend more time with family, with friends, with hobbies, what have you.
Yeah.
It's pretty empowering.
So a recovering nonprofit leader, huh?
That's right.
Talk to me about real estate trends. Hmm. And I guess let's start with, like, in your business, what real estate sectors do you serve? Residential, commercial, multifamilies?
Yeah, so every broker in the state is their license includes both commercial and residential. That doesn't mean every broker should be doing both commercial and residential.
Yeah.
We focus primarily on residential, and which would also include vacant lots, you know, land, raw mm-hmm. land parcels. But that's primarily
summer camps
where we
include summer camps.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
just checking.
Yeah.
Asking for a friend.
Right. no, those are fun. Because, you know, it's a fun purchase. It's people have hit a certain point in their life where this has been their goal, and you're part of them achieving it, which is the same with home ownership, even land purchases.
Yeah.
Those are fun celebrations. And but the trend, since you asked, you know, a lot of the business is unfortunately coming from death and divorce these days. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't a lot of housing stock. So
people, or movement within and outside of those two
reasons. So you're right. So for people who might be inclined to sell and move to another neighborhood, another town, there just aren't that many options. So who is selling? And it's really death and divorce related at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. How much of that, in your opinion, is, which you know, aren't on the hook for, but just your opinion, is related to mortgage rates? So, like, I have a sweet mortgage rate. Yeah. And you couldn't pay me to leave and jump into a 6% anything.
Sure, and that's actually a big point of discussion right now, because there's a lot of talk about people waiting for the rates to come down.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not going to ever see 2%. Not for a long time.
Well,
we're going to see 2%.
No, probably not. And what they're saying is, by the time you go to purchase and you've waited for the rate to drop, well, the price of the property has increased.
Yeah.
You know, some people are waiting for the market to crash. Mm-hmm. It's not crashing.
Air quotes, folks, for if you couldn't see that.
Right. It's not crashing.
It's not. It's not
a very different scenario than 2008, 2009. There is a basic economic principle of supply and demand.
Yeah.
It's not bad loans. It's not.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people in 2008, they bought their house, and it's almost like driving the car off the lot. They would be instantly underwater.
Yeah.
They paid too much. They were now.
It took 6 months back then for me to get underwater. Mm. Wasn't quite immediate, but yeah, I know exactly what that felt like.
But you buy it today, and it's you have instant equity.
Yeah.
You know, so people that get in any type of trouble, you know, and I know the credit card debt is increasing, but you get in trouble, you have the equity of your own property to fall back on, and it's just a completely different scenario. So people that are waiting for the foreclosures to hit the market,
it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Certainly not like 2008. People that are waiting for the prices to come down, it's not going to happen. We have a housing shortage, and people aren't building houses at a rate. We see a lot of apartment units coming on the market, including locally, but we don't see the single family homes that need to be built. And you know, we're talking just the state of Maine is short 84,000. Single-family homes, and we don't see 84,000 homes being built or anything close to it. They're targeting at least 2030 before things become balanced again. So you're looking at a price increase annually of, I think next year is supposed to be 4.3 to 5.3%. You do that every year, and you realize, well, geez, the quarter to a half percent I could save on an interest rate is going to get pummeled by my price increase. So what am I really waiting for?
And we need that movement in where people are living and how that frees up inventory and moves around inventory, because it's just so frozen. And in a personal plea, I have four boys living at home who are never going to leave unless something changes. I love them. But unless something changes, like that's a very, as I'm looking and trying to talk to them, I'll be honest with you, they have no goal at all of moving out and renting because the inventory is so tight, even in the rental market, that the costs are so high. And they're smart enough to know that I'm paying someone else's equity instead of my own, and I'm helping someone else's assets instead of my own. And so my kids, because I don't know if this is a good thing. I don't think the answer's in yet, really. But they're not going to move out until they can purchase. And they're looking at purchasing multifamilies because they see the asset and they want to be, you know, benefiting from it. So from
I love that.
I know. I'm so proud of them. They're never going to leave, though, Brian.
Well, to make
but
you
this
feel
is
better,
real.
Makes you feel better. Mark and I were talking about this in the lobby, so you can't answer the question. What's the average age of a first-time home buyer today? Do you know?
I'm 36.
Pretty good. It's actually, it's 38.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's pretty
good. There's no, there's, yeah.
I mean, to me.
Oh, they can't stay home that long.
Right. Right. 38.
They're renting, right? Like most of our first home buyers aren't moving out of mom and dad's house. Tell me that. Tell me that in your statistics.
A lot of basement dwellers.
Oh, God.
But a lot of them are, but to your son's point is.
Yeah.
They don't want to pay someone else's mortgage.
Yeah.
Good for them. That's exactly how they should be looking at it.
Thank you. We worked hard to teach them some basic principles around assets and wealth. Again, I was poor, and I, you know, breaking the generational cycle of poverty is something that is hard and takes education and practice and modeling, and also means that while I've done a heck of a job at raising some fine young men who are really smart and making good choices, I will reiterate, they are never going to leave.
So a recent report, and I don't know if I'm comfortable with these numbers in my own brain, but a recent report, you talk about building wealth, net worth for someone who is renting, $5,000 to $10,000. Net worth of someone who has purchased a home, $300,000 to $400,000.
Yeah.
It's a total game changer.
It is a game changer.
And it's generational. So if you're thinking of forever renting, you know, you don't want to maintain the property on your own. You think that's a nice, easy way out. It's really a game changer as far as your long-term wealth ability. And so I'm glad your sons are thinking in that way. And maybe a few more years in the house, as long as they're squirreling some funds away.
Right? No, they're packing it away. Like they're super. I'm really proud of what they're already able to stack away. In fact, I'll give him a shout out by name. Destin, the other night, came home and said, Mom, I put a chunk of money in a CD that's a 6-month CD because I know that I'm just watching the market for those 6 months. Mm-hmm. Signed up for his home buyer's class so that he could get his discounts from completing a homeowner's and having the certificate. and is doing great at his savings goals.
That made my day, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm really proud of it too. I get water in my basement, so they don't get to be basement dwellers. And I had thought about fixing that, but you guys just sold me on like letting that run out a little bit longer. I don't want to upgrade my basement anytime soon. They might never leave.
You know, if you did keep them down there, they might move out quicker.
I know. Good point. We're going to talk about this weekend. We're going to think this through this coming weekend. Because, yeah, it's a very
real thing. You
might
find that someone fixed it while they're living down there.
Oh, one of them's an electrician. So I'm fortunate in that regard. The other one's a roofer, but he didn't become a roofer until after I had my roof replaced. So blew that for a 30-year time frame. It's substantial. The conversation that I've been having, and I guess maybe the best way to say this is for me to just state my opinion, and then I'd love your insights on it, right? But it's a tough time in our community economically for a lot of people and for a lot of reasons. You've touched on housing. And for example, if there is 84,000 homes that we are short of, I literally just had a conversation today where somebody, you know, was expressing essentially the homelessness problem that this area is experiencing is because we just give a lot of handouts and we attract it. And there's a narrative of that out there. And if you talk to people who are homeless, and it's maybe not the person that you see standing on the corner that you equate as homeless, but there's a lot of people who are homeless who are not on that corner because they're working a full-time job. This sounds so obvious, but it turns out that being homeless is a factor of not having a home, period. Mm-hmm. that is the problem. And we have an absolute shortage of rental and homes to purchase. And there are lots of people who lost their home largely because they were renting. Somebody new bought the property either so that they could move in because there is a shortage, or they're doing renovations and getting a full market value. Mm-hmm. And there's no place for that person to go. Like being home, it sounds so obvious, but it's worth repeating. Being homeless is purely a function of not having a home, period. And we don't have homes. So of course we have more homeless folk in our community who are unhoused. And so there's something afoot there.
The average home price is $325,000 in all of Androscoggin. $325,000. I don't know how a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
You know, so you think, okay, well, renting must be the more affordable option. It's a crazy rental market.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, $1,800 to $2,500 in rent?
Yeah.
I mean, depending on how many bedrooms you have, I mean, it's
studios are 12 to 14.
I don't know. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
I mean, my house, the first house I bought was $135,000. You know, it was a nice ranch, a modest ranch on it was actually almost 2 acres up in Herman, Maine, which isn't a booming
metropolis,
but, you know, bedroom community to Bangor when we were up there. You know, that property today is, you know, a $375,000, $400,000 property.
Yeah.
I don't know how people do it. So to say, oh, more people are homeless because of that makes total sense to
me. Yeah, I know.
If you can't afford it, you can't afford it.
So recently there was an article in the Sun Journal about the record amount of permits that have been pulled in the cities of Auburn and Lewiston and in the amount of housing that's in the pipeline. And so there's relief on the horizon. It's not here yet. I don't think people realize the time that it takes to put for a developer to find investors, to put together a financing package, to buy the land, to get through the permitting process, to then find the contractors, to get in their dance card, which is longer than ever now, to the point from like, yes, I have the permissions and the ability to create this new housing, whether it's multifamily, whether it's single family home, to turnkey, and actually someone being able to like call it home. Man, it's a timeline.
It's a process.
Yeah. And so we know there's relief on the horizon. We know that it's coming. There's thousands of rental units. And I think what's exciting for me is of different sizes, of different configurations, of different ownership models, and of different quality. With all of this inventory kind of slated to come into the market, I believe that it is going to have really positive impacts on other segments of our local economy. Hospitality, which has just taken a beating for 5 years straight. It just, it breaks my heart. I think hospitality is going to come back as a sector. I don't think that some of the great places that we've lost recently will come back. I think, unfortunately, there's going to be more folks who really struggle with staying open before those houses come online, those rental units come online, people are moving in, and then they're looking for their neighborhood coffee shop and their brunch joint and the after dinner spot. And like, that's coming. Not soon enough for many, many people, for sure. But from a broader kind of economic lens, I really think the housing is the solution to a lot of our economic issues. And I just, as somebody who's engaged in real estate and has some deep nonprofit kind of background too, I'm curious what you think about that.
I think that solves or cures a lot of ailments, no question. You know, I would say one element that concerns me is the level of multi-units and not owner-occupy multi-units.
Yeah.
You know, rental opportunities versus single-family units. I wish that ratio was a little bit different. I think we need far more single-family units than it's what's on the docket for things to really change, because what we see is, when people own their own home, they tend to be more invested in their community, invested in their property, than an investor from may or may not be local.
Yeah.
You know, the single family homeowner is also now engulfed in the community. They're committee members, they're coaches, they're volunteers.
Planning board members.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right.
Which that's my own personal contribution to the point.
Which I think we're missing right now. In fact, I would say we are behind the eight ball, because a lot of our employers, and I would say, and I don't want to sound too elitist here, but a lot of the top level, top tier positions don't live here.
I know.
I think that's a real detriment to our community, because these are obviously people with you know, high IQ, high intellect, that can really contribute.
High salary and disposable income. That's who are leaving our community at night and going and spend them in a different place.
Earning their livelihood here, but spending it elsewhere.
They're exporting our dollars.
Not just dollars, but their
skills,
talent,
talents.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, back when the hospital, you know, you were, as a doc, you were expected to live within within spitting distance of the hospital, and they would be involved in the community. We don't have that today.
Yeah.
You know, the high-end people at local employers, they're just not expected to be here. In fact, I hear HR personnel say, we really want to recruit you, and we're going to find you a place to live somewhere else.
Yeah.
To me, that's...
Breaks
that's,
my heart, too.
It breaks my heart. It's something that we need to overcome and quickly.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you saying that, because you should know I'm coming back at you for that specifically, because we're doing a lot of talent attraction work here at the Chamber in terms of marketing, providing HR supports and employer supports to help with the recruitment process, ways to support follow along spouses and their children. If we're successful at bringing someone here, we're doing a lot for our younger rising professionals to attract and retain them and create both professional and social relationships to tether them. And so everything that you've just said is both things I'm really extremely familiar with, breaks my heart and is a little bit frustrating, and that I'm really trying to figure out solutions around. And this is like a whole nother episode, whole nother guest that I will have to figure out. But if we could solve the housing part, right? Like, if we had some of the best homes that were available and in this community, in this county, so that we didn't have the HR recruiters or chief executives telling our real estate agents, and I've had that conversation with so many folks in real estate, hey, we've got someone, we really want them, make sure you take them down to Falmouth and show them some of the homes down there, which it breaks my heart when I hear that. Even if we had the inventory here that met their lifestyle needs, their income levels, the secondary piece that we just can't get around, and it's all connected, is education. So if you're able to bring in, you know, those highly skilled, highly talented folks and give them the inventory here, if they have children, plan to have children, might at some point have children, then that's one of the, right after the housing, that's the second thing that makes them consider a different community. And man, we got to crack that nut. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, we hear it all the time.
Yeah.
I don't blame the HR director. You know, Falmouth gets attention because it's consistently 1, 2, or 3 in the state in the school systems.
Yeah.
So if that's what's important to you, that's where you're going to end up. They have earned it. We, as a community, need to earn it.
Yeah.
And so that means we need to step up our standards. If we're expecting that to happen, we need to step up our standards and deliver.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not as easy as snapping a finger, but it's something that's got to be done. And what I like about it, and what I like about real estate, really, getting into, I think a lot of people, members of the chamber, is they're in business for themselves because they're betting on themselves, right?
Yeah.
They can control their own destiny to some degree. We, as a community, have the ability to do something about it.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt. It's not going to turn on a dime.
Yeah.
But it's something that we can control.
Yeah.
So why aren't we?
Like I said, that's a whole nother episode.
Whole nother
but episode. They're just, we couldn't solve one without the other. Right? Like, even if we immediately had a top performing educational schools and systems and outcomes here and didn't have housing, we'd be in the same spot, right? Mm-hmm. But just having the housing isn't enough. And I think it's a really, really important piece of what it is for us to figure out to get to the full picture of a thriving community and thriving economy. Which is what we focus on.
Now, keep in mind, I'm born and raised here. I love this community. I graduated from Edward Little. Bleed red, Eddie red.
I'm a blue devil, but I'll give you a break.
My wife is from away. She's a Massachusetts girl. She loves this community, perhaps even more than I do.
That's sweet.
So know that that's the flavor from which this comes, but We've got some real barriers, one of them being, you know, housing stock, but I wouldn't put that tops on the list. We've got education, and I was really thrilled and still extremely supportive of the whole new Edward Little High School. Mm. People can't wrap their brains around spending that kind of money. I look at it as investing that kind of money. That's a step in the right direction for a community to get back on the map. Mm-hmm. Yet I'll follow that up with our taxes are through the roof. Mm-hmm. For what you get compared to other communities, it just doesn't seem consistent. And as a realtor, those are the things that I hear right off the bat.
Yeah.
Our school systems and elevated taxes. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, since October 25th, it's also a safety concern.
Yeah. But we've got work to do.
Yeah. But again, within our control, I believe.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. Those are definitely the top concerns that we see. They're all connected. There's research out there on, and it comes back to housing, though this is an area that we're winning on, but lead poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Younger children who are more susceptible to lead poisoning for a whole host of reasons because of how it shows up in an older housing stock. Children who have lead poisoning, research shows, are less likely to graduate, less likely to perform academically, and as such are also more likely to get involved with crime, mm-hmm. right, in the criminal justice system. And likewise, even children without lead poisoning issues who are, this is my terrifying fact that keeps me up at night, the prison industry forecasts the amount of spaces and beds that they need to project to build or by third grade reading levels, with surprising accuracy for decades.
Hmm.
They can tell you how many people will be imprisoned based on how they were doing reading in the third grade. Hmm. And this isn't new, it's not recent, and they've been projecting accurately and building those beds at the rates that they needed to on target for a long time.
Hmm.
Right? So it all, like, the fact that you name housing, crime, and education as three areas, I would just say, like, and you can't parse one out. I think that's the problem, that mm-hmm. many communities, some of our own included, but not just us, try to solve one of those.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to tackle this, or we're going to tackle that. And the thing is they're so connected.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not able to get on the balcony and look at the whole picture of what I like to call the dance floor and the patterns of movement down there, you're not going to see that you can't pull one out from the other. years.
All intertwined.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I told you this was going to happen because I always love these conversations. So let's move into our final segment. We could talk all day. See, I told you.
You got a lot of editing.
It's super easy. Don't worry, it's just me who cuts.
It's my life. Our closing segment is Looking Back, Leading Forward, a reflective closing where we invite our guests to share advice or insights they would give to their younger self or to those with big ambitions in business or community leadership.
I think this is the question I'm going to ask you. If you could offer advice to your younger self, what would it be?
Well, geez, I guess one thing would be I wish I was in real estate probably 20 years before I was, but I don't regret my time in the nonprofit sector, because I think it made me part of who I am. Mm-hmm. But I think that would have been a much better fit for me, if I were to say that. Words of advice. You're looking for something really profound.
I mean, not necessarily. Don't sit on a bench that has a wet paint sign, I guess, would work.
Right. Yeah, throw in a life hack if you want to.
Yeah.
I guess it would be... I think my younger self thought it was okay as long as I showed up. And you hear that a lot, right? Showing up, being present. But I think my advice to myself would be, or to anybody for that matter, would be show up as your best version of you.
Mm.
Did I show up with all of me or part of me? It's not just one to occupy space, to be there, but to bring it every day.
Yeah, that's really, really great advice. That's really great advice. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's easy to not think about or to delve into the practice of self-awareness. How am I showing up? How was that today? And
I often think, geez, did I bring it today? It felt a little off. What did I not bring? Mm-hmm. And how could that have gone better? Try to do better tomorrow.
It's all we can do. But I think that's super important. You keep your eyes out for a little lakefront anything for me.
Absolutely.
In the meantime. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I've enjoyed it.
I really, really
delighted to be here.
Thank you.